Golden Gate Bridge on San Francisco Bay is a great feat of engineering. The Royal Crown was on display in a jewelry store on Fifth Avenue. A frontier party often included square dancing as a form of recreation. The Salvation Army men were collecting clothes to give to the New England flood victims. The fishermen pulled hundreds of trout from the lake in a single season.
The authors of those sentences were E.F. Lindquist and A.N. Hieronymus, with the assistance of Julia Peterson, Roland Ray, Leonard S. Felt, Miriam M. Bryan, Barbara Long, Thelma Lewis, Ruth Miller, Janet Afferblock, and Mary Vermillion. But they could, heaven forbid, be you.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University brings you Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about the process of writing creatively. Conducting the program is Jacqueline Jackson, author of children's books and professor of literature at Sangamon State University. To begin today's program, here's Ken Ost.
Jackie, the title of our program today is Punk Sentences. Were those an example of punk sentences?
Those, yes, were certainly an example of punk sentences.
But the punk is P-U-N-C on the copy here.
With a dot.
With a dot.
Don't forget the dot.
Don't forget the dot, right.
This is an abbreviation for punctuation. This doesn't mean that I haven't made a little play on words there, of P-U-N-C dot being equivalent to P-U-N-K, meaning sort of lousy. These sentences were taken out of a test book called the Iowa Test that many schools give every year from grades 3 up through grades 9. Our kids had it in Ohio. They had it again in Rockford, Illinois. They're given nationwide, and these particular sentences are ones to test how well the school children have learned the skills of punctuation and capitalization. And they're typical. Nobody's ever said that these tests have to be interesting or literary, but they also have never said that these tests have to be dull, and they certainly are. The other day, the principal of the school that two of our children go to in Rockford talked to me over the phone, and she said it suddenly occurred to us to do something about those sentences, that our children don't seem to learn punctuation and capitalization and things like that very well, and we've wondered, maybe it's partly the sentences, that the whole business is so dull and so unimaginative that they're turned off by them. And we wonder if you could do something as a writer to increase the interest of these sentences.
Fine idea.
So today on the program, I thought, let's throw the whole thing open to school children in general. After all, the school children are the victims of these kind of sentences, and let's have some children's liberation here and see if we can improve these capitalization and punctuation sentences. What did you notice most, say, about those five sentences that I read?
Well, they were uninteresting.
And the reason they were uninteresting is that they were like old blobs of bubble gum stuck underneath a table edge, in that one might have been grape-flavored and one might have been some other flavor, but they didn't have any relationship to each other.
They were all trivial, neat little facts that were set out for you, and the reaction would be, is that so?
And then you hear the next one, and you say, is that so?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's about it.
I have read sentences of this sort, and I used to latch on to them rather hopefully in school, where something would begin to get going. You'd have one sentence that would introduce a subject. The next sentence would seem to develop it a little bit. It would carry it along. It would have something to do with the sentence before it. The third sentence might even have something to do with the second sentence, and you were beginning to get something. There was a thread going through. There was going to be a story, perhaps, something interesting. Then you'd get to the fourth sentence, and it would throw in something like the Golden Gate Bridge cost blah, blah, blah to construct back in such and such a time. the whole thing would be gone, and your hopes mm-hmm. would droop. And later, they might begin to tell another story or get to developing some subject, but no. They weren't really thinking about the material being read, only whether you would know to put the capital letter at the start of a proper name or where to put the quotation marks or the exclamation point or things like that, so that the thing read was really of no importance, just how it would help you to develop the skill.
I suppose there's no reason you can't have an exciting story and still get all the rules that one needs about punctuation, capitalization worked into it.
We could ask, of course, why do we have to know these rules?
Ah.
Why do we spend so much time in school learning where to put the capital letters, where to put the punctuation? Has it always been this way?
Are you thinking of E.E. Cummings by any chance?
Well, here, of course, is a modern poet who doesn't use any capital letters at all. How does he get away with it? Here is modern advertising, which sometimes is all capital letters and sometimes is no capital letters, and I've seen ads where they mix them. And this, of course, is terrible. Why do the advertisers get to do it, you see?
Well, I assume the communication is the main reason here. We want to have rules of spelling and so on so that people can understand what you're talking about readily. Otherwise, they'd wonder.
I think that's true. That what we're striving for is easier and more effective communication. But so many schools and textbooks seem to get hung up on the actual rules, that we're sort of bowing down and worshiping the rules, and rather than saying these are means to an end of better communication. And so the rules seem to get more emphasis than what's being communicated. Mm-hmm. And that's what's wrong with these sentences, really. They're not communicating anything, just a hodgepodge of information or of bits and pieces that don't have any coherence, so that, in effect, we are worshiping punctuation and capitalization rules. And I think if we recognize that the rules are there, but that you can break the rules, you know? Let's learn the rules, and then we can break them, as in advertising. They do this for a certain catchiness, for a certain design. If you have reason to break the rules, okay. And if you follow the rules, that gives you something else, too. For instance, if you don't know how to do capitalization and punctuation and all that jazz, as Jill says, and then you write a letter to a prospective employer, say, when you're 16 or 17, he'll look at that letter and he'll say, this kid, you know, isn't literate enough. Whereas if you know how to do it, then you can do it if you want to. You have the option. You have the option of being literate or illiterate, whereas if you haven't learned these things, you don't have that option. Here's an example of some of the sentences that we've been having some fun writing. Ahoy, all you fellow sufferers. This is Jill Jackson speaking. I am going to write you some cap and punk sentences. C-A-P dot P-U-N-C dot. We have to learn where to put the caps and where to put the punks. There is a grown-up poet named E.E. Cummings. And then she goes on to tell what we've talked about, how he never uses any capital letters. He would flunk the Iowa test, says Jill. He is dead now. I don't think capital letters had anything to do with it. There is a writer named Don Marquis. He wrote a book called Archie and Mehitable. Archie is a cockroach and Mehitable is a cat. Archie writes the story by jumping on the typewriter keys. He can't work the shift bar for capital letters. It takes all his energy just to jump on the small letters. So there are no capital letters in Archie and Mehitable. We have a girl living with us named Jan Sisti. She sells traveler's insurance. When she sends out advertising letters or any letters, she doesn't use any capital letters. She thinks it is cute. When you're grown up, it is called cleverness or style. When you are a kid, it's called stupidity. Here's another one that Jill and I worked out. Mrs. Anderson, our principal, asked me and my mother if we would write some sentences. She wants sentences to help kids learn where to put capital letters, also where to put punctuation. We have plenty of sentences already, of course, in our English books, but Mrs. Anderson wants them interesting. She's funny that way. It's about time somebody thought about those dumb sentences. I asked Mom if they had dumb sentences when she went to school. She says they were just as dumb, and that they also had dumb spelling sentences and dumb penmanship sentences. She can still remember the penmanship sentence for V. Vera Cruz is a seaport. That's all there was to it. Nothing about Vera Cruz in the sentence before it or in the sentence afterwards. It sat alone like a peeled boiled egg on a mattress. But Mother said she had to admire it, for it was a crafty sentence. It made you write a capital C as well as a capital V, and also a small Z, which is one of the harder letters. Years later, she came across Vera Cruz on a map. It was a seaport. She always thought it was pronounced Cruz to rhyme with buzz, but just this year she found out it's pronounced Cruz to rhyme with booze. So those are the sentences we worked out on for some cap and punk sentences, bringing in the spelling and the penmanship sentences.
And very interesting ones they are, I will attest.
We also did some thinking about the kind of people that write these sentences and had some fun with that. You know, is it a computer? Now here we have an impressive list of people who have contributed to these sentences on the Iowa test. What sort of person would you guess would sit around writing those sentences?
I think, as a friend of mine used to say, a chalky pedagogue.
A chalky pedagogue. This might be a topic that would be fun for the sentences themselves. You see, it's a poking fun, sort of. We have to learn these sentences, but let's have some fun with them. So let's make some sentences that discuss what sort of people write these sorts of sentences as they fish this fact out of a barrel or this fact out of an encyclopedia. Here's a good one. Another area that would be fun for writing these sentences is to use the characters of the sentences themselves as part of the story, say. I tried writing a story about a man who worked in a dot-to-dot coloring book factory and was the man in the office that sent out the letters, and he loved abbreviations. And so he would put abbreviations for everything. But his letters got, and you see, this would give you lots of practice if you were writing these sentences, in writing abbreviations and learning that you're supposed to put a dot at the end of abbreviations. So the man in the coloring book factory got writing more and more abbreviations and making up his own abbreviations so that nobody could read his letters, finally. So his boss, whose name was Roy G. Biv, and that was a little hidden bit of fun because that's a mnemonic device for the colors of the rainbow, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet. That name, Roy G. Biv, will help you remember the colors of the rainbow, and that seemed proper for a coloring book factory. He came in and fired this man who loved abbreviations, and the man was very much upset because he gave him a lesser job where he couldn't abbreviate. And finally it comes out in my story that the man who makes the abbreviations does it because he loves to make the dot on the end. And so they discover, well, if that's all your problem is, so they make him in charge of the division of the dot-to-dot coloring books. And then he gets to make all the dots for the dot-to-dot coloring book. So it's sort of having fun with the punctuation marks. I have another one where, let's see, little period was a period. He always came at the end of a sentence. He was like a caboose. The only time he didn't was when there was a question mark there instead, or an exclamation point. He got pretty tired of being last. Why can't I ever be first? You see, that sentence lets you use some quotation marks. Why can't I ever be first? He asked. Shut up, said his mother. Periods don't talk. They only sit at the end of sentences and don't ask questions. Little period's mother was a bracket. I'm going to be first no matter what anybody says, little period said to himself. He got up from the end of the sentence that he was sitting on and went and sat down at the start of the sentence. Everybody read it and thought little period was a fly speck. When they got to the end of the sentence, their voices all stopped in midair, sort of waiting, because they didn't know that they were at the end of a sentence. "Where is little period?" they cried. You could take a story about a question mark, or about a exclamation point.
Or a Spanish question mark, because Spanish question marks are at the beginning and the end of sentences. They really have fun.
That's right, and the Spanish question mark is, it's upside down.
Mm-hmm.
It's upside down and backwards at the beginning of a sentence. Now, there would be a good story,
yeah.
The Spanish question mark that got lost in an English book. And he kept going and sitting himself at the front of sentences. There, that would be fun.
Okay, Jackie, I think that all of you youthful authors have some great sentence ideas already out there. I really believe it. And we'll hope to let us hear about them. Okay? Okay.
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Please send us your Cap and Punk stories and send them to Jacqueline Jackson in care of WSSR Radio, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.